The Man in Line.
Good afternoon. It's 6 minutes past 12. The Man in Line in session through till one today. Today, the Environment, Food and Agriculture Minister, Geoffrey Boot, is with us. You can text, you can email, and you can call. Text 166177. Email studio at manxradio.com. Text 166177. Call 66 1368. Just a quick run through the COVID numbers. 18,834 tests have been taken. 18,819 concluded. 15 people waiting for results. 42 people waiting tests at the moment, and we have just one active case on the Isle of Man. It's an isolated individual, non-community case. So, Geoffrey Boot, good afternoon, Mr. Boot.
Fast am I.
Well, what year it's been. I'll just ask you very briefly, in the Ministry, the Environment, Food and Agriculture Minister, what effect has COVID had?
Well, I'll answer you question a little earlier. I'm looking forward to the days getting longer.
Yes.
Yes, and you're right. It's been a really bizarre, strange year. Who could believe that we would, in March, remove public freedoms and rights that have been with us for years, in obviously a good cause, save life and protect the island. But from my department's point of view, we've been quite badly affected, or the people that we serve have. The fishing industry lost its markets almost overnight, which obviously it was very concerning. The agricultural product side on Ireland, there was still a market, but with restaurants closed and access to other countries restricted, that posed big problems for us. And then looking at the lockdown situation, our health and safety team, we're working with public health and environmental health, our planning department, repurposing businesses so they could do takeaway in breach of their planning consents, as it were. But we tried to facilitate this to help people remain in business and service the community. And latterly, we've been heavily involved in contact tracing. And obviously, at the moment, things are going well. The island is almost COVID-free. I say almost because we get the odd case, but they're not in the community. They're normally as a result of travel. So we're in a good place. When I speak to my opposite numbers and relatives in the UK, where they're still in virtual lockdown, we're in a good position to enjoy Christmas.
In regards to fishing, what's the situation? Because obviously there's another sort of Damocles about to descend, and that being Brexit as well.
Well, Brexit seems to have been forgotten to a certain extent because of the pandemic, and I guess that's the way things work. But Brexit has been going on, and my department particularly is in the midst of that because we're affected more than perhaps any of the other departments in government. The fishing industry at the moment is waiting with bated breath, as indeed we are, as to what the outcome of the Brexit negotiations will be. I'm hoping that at the very least we'll maintain the status quo, because we need access to those European markets. They're extremely important for our fishing product, scallops particularly, but also shellfish, whelks. If we can see an improvement in that position in terms of quota going forward, so that we can recapture some of the quota we lost in the past, that would also be a useful adjunct to the whole situation.
When will we know?
How long is a piece?
January the 1st, at least.
String, yes. We keep hearing that it's going to be imminent. I can say that from a department and government point of view, we are in constant contact with the UK, but at the end of the day, we know as much as you do in real terms from the news.
So as we stand at the moment, the scallops, any scallops, any shellfish that we had could go to Europe under the existing agreement.
No. That's patently not the case. We have a licensing regime, and vessels that fish in our waters have historic record and an ability to have a license to fish in our waters. That involves vessels from Northern Ireland, Southern Ireland, and with the UK generally, as well as Belgium and France. Fortunately, I would say that not many vessels come, or very few, if any, come from Europe as such, apart from around the Irish Sea. In terms of going forward, the scallop situation will remain the same, or we hope it will. It's a difficult position because we control our territorial sea, but we're part of the UK in terms of the fishing quota, etc.
The point I was making was any scallops that were landed by Manx boats previously could be exported, couldn't they?
Oh, sorry, I misinterpreted what you were saying. Yeah. Yes, yes. In fact, the majority of the scallops that we land...
Oh, they were delicacies in Paris, weren't they?
Yeah, they go to France particularly, yeah. But also other parts of Europe.
So what has to happen for that to continue?
Well, a trade agreement with the EU would be a good precursor to that trade continuing tariff-free. But if we have to revert back to World Trade Organization rules and tariffs, then there will be a tariff scenario. And at the moment, it would appear that around 8% tariff on scallop exports.
OK, let's go to our first caller now. Robin is on the line. Good afternoon, Robin. You're live with Geoffrey Boot, MHK.
Good afternoon, Minister. I'm just inquiring if you're aware of the wallaby infestation on the Isle of Man.
Robin, some people would call it an infestation. Other people might call it a useful and pleasant addition to our wildlife. There are obviously diverse views on this.
What do you call it, Robin?
These critters are destroying the flora and fauna and having an impact on certain species that are home to our island. And we're being overrun, infested with these. They're a menace, they're rodents. And I'm just wondering what the minister is going to do about it.
Robin, the minister is not going to do anything about it at the moment. I'm sorry to inform you. We have had discussions and we've had reports done on what the wallabies mean to various parts of the ecology on the Isle of Man. And they are now a sort of established as part of our fauna and flora, although they are an alien species. Some people would like to see them controlled, and in fact, if people wish to control them on their own land, there is no impediment to humanely disposing of the animals, but as they're feral and not native to the Isle of Man. But I think the majority of people that I deal with like the wallabies, and if you look at the hospice last year with their wallaby fundraising campaign, it was surprising how much support the wallabies got as a result of that.
What's your view, Robin?
Well, my view, I mean, we're not dealing with cuddly koala bears here. We're dealing with a species that is tearing the countryside apart. And I would suggest that Mr. Boot perhaps creates a shooting party and goes out and blasts the blighters.
Why particular? What do they do then? Because people in the south of the island will just see the wallabies occasionally and think they're just cuddly creatures. Occasionally they leap out in front of cars. What damage are they doing, Robin?
Take a look at the Sulby Claddocks and just look at the degradation of just everything, really. They are just eating everything possible. The hen harriers are moving elsewhere. It's something that I'd say Mr. Boot has got to take stern action and deal with, and I know he's a hunting type, and maybe he could do the island a service.
Okay, Robin, how many wallabies are there?
It's not a quantified amount, but we believe there are probably 400 or 500 distributed around the island, mainly obviously around the wildlife park. That's where they emanated from, and they have spread out. I've seen one on my land, and
500.
Maybe no confirmed amount. We don't count them, and but there are quite a few.
And exponentially growing, obviously.
Well, they obviously do breed, and there are some that are controlled that I know of. But I guess in time they will continue to spread. I'm not sure that they are devastating to the environment. They do obviously inflict some ecological damage.
Are they a predator?
No, they're not a predator. They're a herbivore, and they eat plant life, and obviously in certain habitats compete with other animals. But they're not dangerous. They are obviously competing in some situations, and we have had some studies carried out, and there is some impact, but it's not that great.
Okay, Robin, thank you. Betty, you're live with Geoffrey Boot, MHK.
Hi, Minister. I was just wondering about if the deal with the EU goes through, there have been clauses put in the exit bill that say that fishing in Manx and Channel Island waters can be allowed. Other jurisdictions can be allowed to fish in those waters in some circumstances. And I wondered if that concerns you and what you're going to do about it.
Well, Betty, first of all, we don't know what the deal will be, and we've been fighting hard to make sure that our present situation it remains in the very least, and maybe some improvement on that, depending on how the UK negotiate with the EU. At the end of the day, certain vessels from outside of the Isle of Man do have historic access to our waters, but we should never forget that we also have historic access to waters outside of the Isle of Man. And so we need to be careful that we don't just close everything down and call Manx waters for Manx vessels, because sometime in the future, if quota changes or the requirements for different types of fish change, then we may need access to waters outside of our territorial sea. So there's a give and take, but we are certainly not in a position where we're giving more fishing rights away. And we recently formed a new licensing regime that will ensure that in future any vessels coming from outside of our waters are licensed to fish in our waters, even if they have as they do at the moment, have historic rights to fish, and most of those vessels are at present licensed as well.
Well, this license you mention, who gives the license? Is it the Isle of Man or is it England?
Vessels that fish in our waters will hold a UK license, but they will also have to hold a Manx-issued license as well.
Because I am concerned that this is a SOP that Britain has thrown to the EU to enable the deal to go through.
Well, we don't know what the deal is likely to be, or if there will.
No, we don't know yet.
And so it's very difficult. Obviously, we are aware that fishing is a contentious issue with the French, and I suspect that the UK in their negotiations are not going to allow anything more than happens at the moment, and I suspect it will be somewhat less in terms of access. So I think we'll be on the right side of that deal.
I hope so. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Betty. Good to talk to you today. Geoffrey Boot, MHK, is with us, the Minister for Environment, Food and Agriculture. Fishing is part of it, but also arboricultural. The forestry is part of your domain, as it were. What's the situation with disease? We had a question in come in on the text about disease in trees on the island.
Well, I think it's fairly obvious that we've had problems over the near past. We've got Dutch elm disease, which we're trying our best to control. In fact, we're holding that back. A lot of our mature trees are elm, and it would be a great shame to lose those. And our culling program will continue. We've had Phytophthora, which has affected larch trees particularly, and there's large areas in our plantations where we're taking out trees that have been affected, and that's ongoing. And recently we've contracted ash dieback, which is a great cause for concern. No doubt people will have seen in our hedgerows and around the countryside ash trees that are looking very poorly, losing their leaves early, and this is ash dieback. And sadly, the prediction is that we may lose 80-90% of our ash trees over the next few years, which not only causes problems in terms of they line our highways and they can be a danger, but it will fundamentally change the appearance of our countryside.
Are we winning the fight?
There is no fight against ash dieback. There's no control measures. Trees either recover or stagger on, or they die. And if they die, they are removed.
Let's also talk about planning, because you're fairly well involved in that as well. What's the most contentious thing at the moment in planning on the island?
There's a number of issues. Planning is always contentious. I think it would be imprudent as de facto head of planning for me to comment directly on specific applications. But planning by its very nature is an adversarial situation where there are winners and losers. And small applications can create big public outcry or comment, and larger applications are equally able to do the same.
A lot going on in Peel. I mean, Peel just continues to grow and grow and grow. Am I right in saying, I mean, it's probably the fastest growing part of the Isle of Man?
Well, it was, obviously we're in a situation where there will be a north and west area plan in process soon, which will look at the future of Peel in terms of commercial and residential development. Obviously, it's part of my constituency. We have a lot of new houses in Peel. It would be nice to see more commercial development so that there are employment opportunities in the town or around the town. But whether Peel has grown as much as it can at the moment is something for the local plan and going forward.
Obviously, being a Peel and Glenfaber MHK and being somebody in charge of planning, how do you compartmentalise your views and your responsibilities?
Well, from a constituency point of view, I normally absolve myself from the decision-making process when it comes to planning. Obviously, I have constituency views and I can represent those views. But I have to be careful because there is a conflict there. And detaching myself and explaining to constituents that sometimes it would be imprudent of me to comment on certain applications because of my position. Fortunately, there are two MHKs in Peel, and Mr. Harmer is well capable of representing people's views in terms of planning, etc., without that conflict.
A note in from Gary who says, has Mr. Boot found any ground for the bikes to ride to replace the closed Snuff the Wind site?
We are looking at a site at the moment, and we're working with the organisations involved. It's not a quick fix, but in the longer term, I'm sure there will be a solution.
We're streaming live on Facebook, streaming live on YouTube as well with Geoffrey Boot, MHK. Big, big portfolio, including moving 500,000 queen scallops. How do you move 500,000 queen scallops? And why?
Well, we've got a cable being laid through the south of the island in our territorial sea, and it goes right through the chickens area, which is a prime scallop bed. Consequently, to ameliorate the damage to the scallop bed, we reached an agreement with the cable layers that they would fish out the scallops in the path of the cable, and they have removed something like 500,000 scallops and relocated them. So that's a great bit of good news.
Still alive, are they?
I hope so, yes. Yeah, no. Scallops, they've been fished live and they are being relocated.
And this is a marine, it's a fibre optic cable that's coming ashore. Is it Port Greenock? It's coming ashore in Port Erin, I think?
I'm not familiar with the detail of the cable, but I do know it's an interconnector between Ireland and the UK. So, yes, it's an important bit of infrastructure.
Well, that's how you do that. How on earth? Well, I'm sure they know exactly how to move half a million queen scallops as well. The department's always pushing outdoor pursuits, says John, on the Isle of Man, as they're great for our physical and mental health. But why are the department's glens, public footpaths and greenways in such bad repair and poorly signposted? And in this day and age, why isn't there an app where we can follow the walks by GPS?
Starting with the signposting, we are trying to address that issue, and we're working on a programme of re-signposting in common with DOI another department, so there's common signage around the island. I would challenge that the glens are in poor condition. There are some where there could be improvements, but the majority of glens have satisfactory and safe walking areas, and we are expanding car parks and facilities so that people have more access. Obviously, there's a certain amount of money to be spent and restrictions on that in terms of what we can spend on the glens, but from my perspective, the more public access we can afford and the better it is, you are absolutely right. Great for the island's health and also showcasing our island and our biosphere status.
26 minutes past 12, live today on the Manor Line, the Minister of Environment, Food and Agriculture, Geoffrey Boot, MHK. Now, if you want to get in touch with Mr. Boot, you can text 166177. Email studio@manxradio.com or call 66 13 68. We've had lots and lots of response to Robin and the Wallabies. I think most people want to keep the Wallabies.
Spreading that Christmas feeling across our island. Manx Radio, the nation's station.
This Christmas at Tracy Bell, bring yourself and an elf to receive 50% off these treatments. Boutique whitening for you and your elf for only £400. That's two for £400. In our non-surgical department, choose an injectable treatment for you and your elf and pay for only one. Call 613323 or visit tracybell.co.uk for details and booking. Available till the 24th of December. Terms and conditions apply. Your merry is our mission at Tracy Bell this Christmas. Go on, treat your elf.
Hear ye, hear ye. Don't miss Artisan Island in Villiers Square, just behind the Alpine in Douglas, on Saturday and Sunday the 12th and 13th of December, where you can taste and stock up for Christmas from 10 until 5, while supporting your local farmers, fishermen and food and drink producers with free entry. Father Christmas will be in his grotto from 12 until 3, so come and enjoy the festive atmosphere at Artisan Island. Visit Douglas Town Centre Management for more.
Make your home smart this Christmas. Manx Telecom have lots of gifts and gadgets for the perfect addition to make your home smarter. With Ring doorbells, Philips smart bulbs and a selection from the Nest Home range. From as little as £6 per month for 24 months. Call in and see what's in store or visit mt.im/Christmas to order online. Terms and conditions apply.
Now we're into December, the doors have started to open on the Manx Radio Advent Calendar. And every day through till Christmas Eve, you could be a huge winner here on the Nation Station.
The Manx Radio Advent Calendar, powered by Waltons.
We've got some fantastic prizes to give away, including Isle of Man Creamery cheese hampers, a staycation at the Manin Hotel, and much more. And our daily winner will also receive a digital radio from Waltons. Just listen out each day for a door to open on the calendar. Join us on the air to answer a Christmas question, and you could be a big festive winner.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Good afternoon. 29 minutes past 12 with Geoffrey Boot, MHK, today. Mr. Boot, where do you personally and the department stand on the growing of cannabis and hemp?
Well, there's some confusion over hemp, recreational cannabis and medical cannabis. Cannabis for medical and recreational use are more of an industrial process than an agricultural process. Hemp, on the other hand, is something that used to be grown on the island, and that can be grown outdoors and is more of an agricultural process. Obviously, there is an ongoing debate. We had a large consultation. I think 5,500 people responded to that in terms of medical cannabis. I have no problems with medical cannabis and bringing in proper regulation on the island, that there could be a good business opportunity there. When it comes to recreational cannabis, the jury's out. Some countries have legalized it. Some are obviously not doing that, and there are arguments on both sides. When it comes to hemp, if people want to grow hemp, I personally have no problem with that. That's not an active substance type agricultural product, but from an island perspective, it's a matter of how do you process hemp on the island? It's going to be a small amount, and to process hemp properly for building materials, rope or whatever, requires a facility. And I suspect the economics of producing it on island, other than small-scale local use, having to ship it off for proper processing will make it a non-starter.
Sorry. Taking a look at the accounts, as it were, for environment, food, and agriculture, the your department costs money. It doesn't generate that much more money. I mean, gross income 3.8 million, gross expenditure 20.6, so net expenditure 16.7. Just explain that in lay terms. What does that mean?
Well, we obviously have an income from things like planning, building control, and various licensing regimes. But we are also responsible for administering the agricultural subsidies and environmental subsidies that go along with that. We are, in essence, the largest regulatory hub within DEFO. We have health and safety, environmental health, planning, building control, among other things, and the Office of Fair Trading. So a lot of that is a regulatory function, costs money rather than recovers money. So there's a lot going on in terms of forestry and the sawmill. We administer the wildlife park. All these things tend to cost money whilst generating some income, but in a lot of cases not generating sufficient income to stand on their own two feet.
Obviously, in terms of, we were talking about the fishing industry as well, and the farming industry, but let's get this straight. They aren't economic engines of the Isle of Man. However, they provide the character for the Isle of Man. Our farmers are custodians of the landscape and of the soil. But of course, other industries generate much more money. So where does farming and the fishing industry sit, do you think, in the Isle of Man?
Well, in terms of GDP, if you look at fishing, agricultural, value added through our food producers, we generate probably around £100 million a year, and that's circular money. Most of it's sticky, it stays in the economy. But as you rightly point out, agriculture and the environment go hand in hand, and we have all-island biosphere status. And when we look out of the window here or we drive around the island, the countryside looks the way it does because, as you rightly point out, the farmers are the custodians and they mould the countryside. We've recently launched a new agri-environment scheme which will encourage environmental improvements through the farming community, and I think that's it's going to be a great thing going forward. From the fishing side, the marine side, we have 10 marine nature reserves now, and there's a lot going on there which we contribute to in terms of regulating what goes on. And what goes on under the sea is sometimes not quite apparent, but if you look at our climate change agenda, there is a lot of carbon sequestration in our seas. And of course, the forestry offering is also key to the environment and climate change and biosphere. So lots and lots going on. And I should mention the upland areas where we have a lot of peatland. Our upland estate is 20,000 plus acres, and part of climate change strategy will be to restore some of the peatland, initially 1,000 acres, and that's very important.
And the peatland stores an enormous amount of carbon dioxide, doesn't it?
It does indeed, and that's why it's so important that either we preserve what we've got or start rebuilding some of the peatland that has been damaged over the years.
You've been around farming all your life, haven't you, with the farming in the family as well. How much have you seen, because obviously you've seen farming change over generations and over decades. How easy is it for farmers to make a living nowadays?
Well, it's not easy. People seem to think that farmers live in luxury and ride around in Range Rovers. The reality is we commissioned some work at the beginning of my administration, as it were, to look at the profitability of Manx farms versus the subsidy that they receive. And if we remove the subsidy, a lot of Manx farms would simply not be profitable businesses. In other
words,
they'd
go bust.
They would go bust, or they wouldn't be making a living. They would have to be subsidised. And a lot of farmers subsidise their farming income from other sources. Anyone who watches Country File on Sunday yesterday will have seen that it's a similar scenario in the UK, with a lot of farms being very marginal. And we have to be aware of that, because at the moment we don't pay farmers, apart from their subsidy, to look after the countryside. They operate businesses there. But if we remove that profitability and farms become unviable, then there may be a situation where we will have to pay for the environmental measures going forward to keep the Manx countryside looking the way it does.
And making families, family farms sustainable, because, and again, this is an oft-quoted story, the sons and daughters of farmers can earn 30, 35, 40,000 in the finance industry. Why should they get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to milk cows?
That is the essence of the problem. And if you look at the cost of food in Europe and the Isle of Man, we actually pay a lot less for our food than its real value. And I hate to say that, but if you look at the effort that farmers put in, you know, my neighbour's milking herd, they're up and having to milk twice a day. They don't go on holiday. The animals require attention all the time. And it's a dedication rather than just a career. And I know from my own experience over the years, a lot of youngsters don't stick with the farming.
Okay. Could you please ask Mr. Boot, what's happening to planning appeals? There seems to be an extraordinary delay, some taking 6 months for a decision.
Planning appeals were held up during the COVID crisis, and we accumulated, I think, a backlog of 28. Since then, we started to clear that. And from my perspective, when they land on my desk, I turn them round generally within 48 hours. But there's an administrative process around dealing with a planning appeal that involves an inspector, him preparing a report, the administration that goes to getting the report to me, and then consideration afterwards. I think the backlog is nowhere near as bad as some people portray. There are some applications that have been very complex and have required detailed consideration and evidence from other parties. But at the moment, we have a system where the appeal inspectors have been able to come to the island. But once again, now that the UK has gone into semi-lockdown, they have been advised not to come to the island. So we are trying to devise a methodology of using virtual visits to sites. But the inspectors have to be satisfied that the person actually walking around with the camera is looking at the bits and pieces that they want to look at and be sure that they've seen the whole picture.
You mentioned earlier on that planning is by its very nature adversarial. And obviously a decision has to be made one way or the other. How do you personally tiptoe through the minefield?
Well, it's not about tiptoeing. I think when an appeal lands on my desk, I look at the inspector's report, I look at the planning background, and I look at the policy that's applied and how it's been applied. And then there's a balance. It's always subjective. It's never, planning is a subjective matter, and it's never quite as black and white as some would think. Sometimes you can make a decision very easily, and based on the planning policy, it's obviously against planning policy. But other times, people don't usually make applications that have no merit. So you have to be careful that you look at the merit of the application and the application of policy.
You must have heard many times, rich people get planning, poor people wait forever.
Certainly from my perspective, I deal with all applications evenly and or even handed. And I think the planning officers do that as well. I think there is a perception there because some individuals do get, larger prominent housing that somehow they have priority. But the vast majority of applications for what I call normal household extensions, etc., go through the system very quickly and they don't attract a lot of attention. So they don't have a profile.
How do you feel about, in the future, solar panels not requiring planning permission?
I think in certain circumstances that they should be permitted development. It seems a no-brainer to me. If we're going down the climate change agenda that we are, we should encourage people to obviously take advantage of the technology available.
Would Mr. Boot be in favour of opening the island's bigger reservoirs to public access for kayaks?
It's not a decision for me in terms of we don't actually operate, or we do operate some of the reservoirs, but the biggest reservoir is obviously owned by MU. And I think there may be issues around potential pollution. When it comes to the reservoirs that we stock for fishing, etc., there is always some conflict between kayaking and fishing activity, recreational activity generally. There are vast amounts of inshore waters available to kayakers around the island. At the moment, as far as I'm aware, there is no great demand for inland waterways to be used for kayaking.
Okay, a note in from Andy and said, could you ask Mr. Boot, in June 2019, the Chief Minister committed to the planting of 85,000 trees by 2024. How many have we planted to date?
The site is prepared and the first trees will be going in the new year.
Whereabouts is it?
It's down at Miriveg. It's a large site. It's taken some preparation. We've been obviously working on the logistics of the amount of trees required, but I'm sure we will have those trees planted before then.
Do we know what trees are they?
They'll be a broadleaf type species that are indigenous to the island.
Okay, Thelma, as soon as Thelma knew that you were coming on, Thelma is our bee enthusiast minister, and she wants to know the health of the island's bee population.
Well, the bee population on the island is, by all accounts, very healthy. I used to keep bees in my younger years, so I do know a bit about bee diseases, but not what they're called.
Could
or
you
how
tell
they...
me, why did you keep bees?
I like honey. it was a small business of mine when I was a youngster, and people used to sort of give me a small stipend for putting a hive in various strategic positions. But bee health on the Isle of Man is good. We're well separated from other land masses. I think we're nearest for 20, 29 kilometres, 30 kilometres, and bees generally only fly about 10 or 11 kilometres. So we want to maintain that status. We have a moratorium on importing bees and bee products equipment that's used to make sure that we don't import disease.
Is it the varroa mite, I think it is?
I think
it?
You are correct in that, yeah, yes. Yeah.
But of course, again, bees are humble beings. As you say, we love the honey and we love the beeswax. And if we don't have bees, everything will die in years, won't it, in years to come?
Well, bees are an important part of our ecology.
Fundamental.
Insects and bees, they pollinate everything, and it's important that we keep them. From an island perspective, we want to keep our bee population as healthy as we possibly can. And I think the beekeeping community are as aware of that as anyone, and they are our eyes and ears.
If you want to get in touch with Geoffrey Boot, MHK, the Environment, Food and Agriculture Minister, we've got loads and loads of texts and emails. And if you want to call 66 13 68.
Manx Radio, the nation's Christmas station. The only station the elves listen to in the workshop.
The Mitre Hotel has a great function room for all occasions, including birthdays, christenings and weddings. And we're taking bookings now for Christmas parties. We cater for all your needs, from a simple buffet to our Christmas carvery. Call 813 045 or visit our Facebook page for further details. The Mitre has the best local beers, great food, top entertainment Thursday to Saturday and famous panoramic views over Ramsey Harbour. The Mitre, your place to party this Christmas.
How much income will you need in retirement? £10,000 per year? £25,000? £50,000? At Moore Stephens Financial Services, we'll create a personalised lifetime retirement matrix to project whether your plans are in line with reality or just a pipe dream. If they are just pipe dreams, we can show you how to get them back on track. Moore Stephens Financial Services. Here today, planning for tomorrow. Moore Stephens Financial Services Limited is licensed by the Isle of Man Financial Services Authority.
When you need a fitting memorial or headstone for a loved one, contact Manx Memorials in Peel. This long-standing family-run Manx company offer a wide range of granite and marble headstones and memorials, along with an island-wide inscription and renovation service. Manx Memorial's skilled professionals will take the time to help you choose a suitable memorial, and we're proud to say we'll beat other local quotes. Call 843 861 or email Matthew at manxmemorials.co.uk.
Typhoon House, happily working to keep you working, whether from home or the office. We can keep your printer or copier fleet running in tip-top condition, whether there's a problem or simply making sure you don't run out of toner. Typhoon House also supply and install new devices, which are more efficient and cost-effective for you and your business. Call 661-331 or email typhoon@typhoonhouse.im. Typhoon House.
Manx Radio Breakfast.
And we'll be back tomorrow from 7.30 with the weather and travel news along with all the morning's main stories.
So although the island is protected from COVID, we're not protected from its economic downstream effects.
And again, anybody trying to increase the cost of the booking may run into difficulties with their guests because they may think that that's unfair.
There's enormous sort of local feeling attached to these stones and to the physical display of them.
So join us tomorrow for Manx Radio Breakfast, powered by Manx Telecom.
The Man in Line. Daily interaction, debate and exchange of ideas. Broadcast on Manx Radio.
13 minutes to one. Geoffrey Boot, MHK. And good afternoon, Nigel. You're live with the Minister.
Good afternoon, Minister. Good afternoon, both of you. Question is, why is the island man so keen on trying to concrete over all the beautiful green pastures and fields that we have on the island? You only have to look at that huge development outside of Ballasalla on the way to Douglas. The meadows in Castletown is now going to have a huge development in from Victoria Road. There's places in Glenvine which are being built over. It seems to be that we're just going to have one huge village from Port Erin to Ramsey in future without any beautiful open areas.
Well, Nigel, I'm sure that my intention, or the other ministers and members of Keys, are keen on concreting over the whole of the Isle of Man. We've just had a very extensive debate on the Eastern Area Plan, which was passed through Tynwald at the last sitting. And the idea of these plans, and hopefully we'll have a North and Western plan within the next few years, is to identify areas that are suitable for development, incentivise brownfield development where possible, but at the same time, keep those green pieces that are so important to everyone between the different developments. There has to be a balance between economic growth and development and providing decent housing for our population and the countryside. One could argue that we should stop all development and just freeze things in aspect, but I don't think that's what people really want. And it's proof that there is demand for housing. You build houses and they do sell.
But where do you live, Nigel?
If I live in the south of the island in Colby. But if I could just come in on that point. Yes, it's very grand to be able to offer builders opportunity to put houses on. But where are all these people coming from? I mean, if you're thinking that you're going to have tens of thousands of people coming from the mainland or other parts of the world, that may, you know, how does it fit with what jobs these people are going to be doing on the Isle of Man? I mean, you can't have everybody working for poker stars.
You're absolutely right there, and economic development is key to the island. When I first came to the island 35 years ago, the population was around 65,000, and it's steadily grown, and we're now just under 85,000. But the fact of the matter is, we're not giving builders land to build on. Builders build because they want to build to make a profit. And if they don't sell the houses and the houses aren't marketable, they won't make a profit. At the moment, it would seem that there are sufficient buyers for the houses that are being produced. But that's the idea of having strategic and area plans so that you can balance demand to supply. And that's what we're doing. Obviously, people don't like to see large developments on their doorstep. I live on the outskirts of Peel in St John's, and I've seen Peel grow dramatically over the last 15 years or so. And whether that is appropriate to grow much more is a question that will be answered in the plan preparation process in the next year or so.
Okay, okay, Nigel, thanks for calling us today. You talked about encouraging and prioritising brownfield site. There are areas of Douglas that have sat brownfield for 20 years and more. When will they get developed?
Well, we would be very keen to see some of these areas developed. Brownfield sites are difficult to develop sometimes. They have inherent problems with pollution, or they have structures on them that need removing, and there are the surrounds. Some of these sites are vacant because A, they're very costly to develop. B, they're on the market for too much money. And C, there is an element of people wanting to live in various locations, and they might not be in a location that people want to live in. So we have to balance all those when we're talking about brownfield site development.
How do you feel about the proposed marina for Ramsay's South Bay?
Well, that's obviously going to be subject to a planning consent at some stage. From a purely personal perspective, I think if it's a viable proposition and it can meet the required environmental standards, if I look at what happened in Peel, we've had problems with the marina there, with silt, etc. But Peel is a different place now that there is a marina there. When I first came to the island, the Peel Harbour used to dry out, and it wasn't a very attractive proposition when the tide was out. And it's also brought a lot of new activity into Peel itself, and that may be the case in Ramsay as well, but the case has to be proven.
James, a note in: any comment from the minister on some residential planning applications submitted over 12 months ago still waiting for a decision? Are you aware of that?
I'm not aware. Well, there may well be some. I'm not in a position to comment without further research in terms of applications that have, and the time that they've taken. All I can say is that the officer teams are motivated to get applications through as quickly as possible. They have targets for applications. I review them with my political team on a monthly basis, and we take them to task if they're falling behind. And of course, over the COVID period, that is exactly what happened. But applications are never as simple as they seem, particularly large applications. There is a requirement for a lot of information, and sometimes an environmental impact assessment and various other things that do take time.
Okay, we have 3 minutes left, 3 minutes to talk about climate change. If you could sum it up in 3 minutes, the world will be happy.
Yeah. I wished I could solve climate change in 3 minutes, but it's highly unlikely to happen. As I think you're probably aware, I am at the moment taking the climate change bill through the Keys. This is a very important piece of legislation that will set the trend and targets for net neutrality, CO2, carbon neutrality by 2050 or earlier if possible. Obviously, it's a complex piece of legislation, but it's mainly enabling at this stage. There are technologies that are in development that will perhaps change the way we address climate change. Certainly, there are some quick actions that we've identified, I think around 60 as phase one of the action plan, and we are in phase two development at the moment, but things are moving ahead. We've got some things like peatland restoration, we've banned peat cutting, forestry or reforestation, the agri-environment scheme where we're encouraging environmental issues, but in terms of power production. We're looking at some green energy initiatives there. There is a lot going on in the background. Some people would like us to move faster, and I appreciate that that is something that is an aim that is you know, good for everyone. But at the same time, we have to balance the economy, people's lifestyles, and the climate change agenda to make sure that we get the best outcomes. We're a small island. Very few people compared to larger jurisdictions. We cannot afford to make big, expensive mistakes and take wrong paths when it comes to addressing climate change. We need to do it properly, effectively, and we need to do it on island, not just buy offsets from you know, South America or somewhere, which is not really doing what we need to do as a community.
Okay, thanks for being with us today, Geoffrey Boot, Environment, Food and Agriculture. We didn't even touch wind power or much on solar power as well, but hopefully we'll do that next time. And so for Christmas and the New Year into 2021, do you have your fingers crossed about Brexit, or do you think everything will work out?
There's two sides to Brexit at the moment. There's the public side and the posturing that's going on, and you can see that between the UK and France particularly, and the other side where the negotiations are taking place behind closed doors. I have my fingers crossed, and I'm touching wood when I say this, that there will be an outcome that is good for the UK and good for us. If there is no deal, we are prepared.
Geoffrey Boot, thanks for being with us today. Good to talk to you, Geoffrey Boot. Glenn Faber and PLMHK for Environment, Food and Agriculture. If you want to follow up on that, by the way, email maninline@manxradio.com or you can call 682631. Later on this week, Thursday, we're live at QE2 School in Peel. It was the school we went to 4 days before lockdown, so it'll be interesting to hear the students' take on COVID-19. And this coming Friday, Lawrence Skelly, Enterprise Minister, will be live in the studio. Thanks to producer Barry Redfern, I'm Andy Wint. And The Man Online is back tomorrow at 12 midday.